Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast. By the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
How you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Beautiful day out there.
Yeah.
Good day to talk. Good day to talk hockey. Season's only been over for 6 or 7 weeks now. For us.
Someone was giving me hell today, like, why are you guys so negative and why are you talking hockey? It's May, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, yeah, that is a really good point because at least the beautiful out, time to get outside. But at the same time, it occurred to me, Bruce, that, you know, in terms of people coming to the Cult of Hockey and reading our blog, there's no more busy time for traffic that we've mm-hmm. seen other than the Oilers being in the playoffs than June, July. Because this is the time of year when all the moves are made, when you're actually it's really the only time when you can make significant moves in terms of building next year's team, the coaching staff, the player moves. This is crunch time for hockey. So this weird thing, and I don't think the NHL used to be this way as much, but it certainly is now in the cap era where it's so difficult to make in-season moves that it all happens now. And so yes, unapologetically, on a beautiful Saturday morning, we're talking hockey.
And I think we got some good news to talk about today, at least within the constraints of the discussion, the assistant coaching hires.
Yes. So what's your take? They hired this week, you know, the kind of the worst kept secrets in Edmonton hockey circles. we were talking about this the other day, Bruce, and it struck me, like, usually when there's very little in the way of trade rumor gets out about the Oilers, like solid trade rumor, because I think Peter Chiarelli talks to nobody, essentially. He's very quiet. Things leak out, I think, from maybe other teams and agents and stuff about the Oilers, but I don't think much comes from Chiarelli himself. But in this case, the worst kept secret at Edmonton has been the hiring of these coaches, Gullitson, Trent Yawney, and Manny Viveros. And it's because this isn't just Chiarelli who knew about this. It was all of the coaches involved, all of the, you know, fired coaches, let go coaches. There's lots of different people who knew this information. And so it's not really news that they've hired these three guys, but we do have confirmation this weekend. And I'm, like most fans, I think like the vast majority of fans, really pleased with the hirings. What do you think of them, Bruce?
Yeah, well, I'm one thing I'm pleasantly surprised in that these three names have all been bandied about for some weeks now. And I thought, okay, well, these are sort of different options that have come available. Maybe they'll get one or two of these guys. Doubtful they'll get all three because usually the number three junior assistant coach position is goes to somebody a little less experienced than the three guys I got. I think are all good to excellent, and especially in the experience department, where they've got two former NHL head coaches, and then Manny Viveros, who is a 52-year-old rising star. I tweeted about him yesterday as being draft choice of the Oilers in 1984, and it only took him 34 years to make the team. But he's here, and his track record is long and varied and highly interesting.
You know, Bruce, the starting point for this is the Oilers really needed a shakeup on this coaching staff. I think that the complacency, or not, maybe that's not the right word, but the lack of dynamism on that coaching staff was really seen last year, and kind of the stubbornness with which they held on to things. There just seemed to be, mm-hmm. I think they're all used to working together so long. Maybe there wasn't enough pushback or something going on, but they didn't respond to things, situations very well, power play, penalty kill, even strength, all kinds of things. We won't. We'll get into
other
some of them.
That.
Yeah. Other than that, it was great goaltending. Other than that, it was great. McClellan, they were on the wrong track clearly, repeatedly last year, and they just seemed to be so slow in reacting. So, hopefully, with all these smart, strong, two former NHL head coaches in Yanni and Gullitson, and a longtime head coach both in Europe and now in the Western League in Viveros, providing new ideas and major pushback and questioning of McClellan, that this kind of stubbornness, they'll be a lot more reactive to whatever's going on, quicker to solve problems and not let things fester. as they did last year. So that's, you know, I just think these changes were needed. Thank goodness they happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, Todd McClellan yesterday on an interview was talking about how they, one of the things that they really wanted to pursue hard was the balance in the coaching staff and getting a group whose talents could mesh and whose personalities would mesh into some kind of a cohesive group. And they certainly have left some things open-ended. A couple of things that caught my ear. One was the idea that there wouldn't be any specific coach who was charged with power play or penalty kill, that both of the special teams would be a group responsibility. And maybe that's just sort of laying the groundwork for spreading out the credit or the blame, as the case may be, when the time comes, and whether, you know, whether one coach sort of takes the lead in those units remains to be seen. But it sounded like a different approach. The other was this idea that they could come start each game with three bench coaches, and then in the third period, Viveros might come down from the press box and join to be a fourth coach on the bench, having watched the first two periods of the game from upstairs, and bringing that perspective down to the bench, which is, I don't know if it's completely new. I think the Oilers used to do it way back when, with maybe Kelly Buckberger or somebody like that. That was a third coach.
Yeah. That just struck me, Bruce, as kind of weird, honestly.
Yeah, well, both of them did in a way. It seems to be much more collective.
Oh, I like the first idea, I think. Maybe part of the problem last year is McClellan has created these silos where the coaches, he's given authority to other coaches, and he didn't feel maybe he was just being a little bit hands-off in terms of intervention and thinking, you know, I'll let these other guys solve it. And then he realizes after he did finally go in and take over the PK from Jim Johnson, is like, man, I should have trusted myself as the head coach and acted sooner. And so I'm not going to create this limit on my authority. I'm going to work, you know, we're going to work collectively, because that's in essence, what happens, I'm sure, with the coaching staff, that they really are. This probably recognizes it's a better way of kind of framing the reality of how problems are actually solved. And, you know, I'm sure that there'll be a couple of them who take, you know, when it comes to running the PK or the power play drills, that'll probably be delegated to a similar person. Mm-hmm. But maybe they don't want to have that person with too much authority to keep doing the wrong thing week after week after week. And maybe that's part of what went wrong last season. So he's going to move away from that. Does that make sense?
Well, it certainly makes sense to change things up when it comes to special teams, because both were a disaster.
Oh, God.
The penalty kill for about 80% of the season, and the power play basically for 100%.
So Viveros has talked about the power play on Oilers Now with Stauffer, and he said things which could have frankly come out of the mouth of Todd McClellan, you know, the need for movement, mm-hmm. the need for fast play, the need for people in front of the net and for taking good shots, just not throwing the puck in the net, make sure somebody's there in front of the net before you do that, that kind of thing. I mean, you could hear that from almost any NHL coach. There was a couple quotes, though, Bruce, about him talking about defensemen that I really did like, though. I'll just read the one right now. And he was talking about he's got a bunch of big, strong, tough D-men on his Swift Current team. But he mm-hmm. also said about them, they move the puck really quick. They play real fast. And we always try to tell them, you get the puck off your stick as quick as possible. If you have time to skate with it, we allow you to do it. But we want that puck moving from our defense and up to the forwards as quick as possible. And again, that's something that we probably heard from the Oilers coaches, but it's something we didn't see last year. Man, those defensemen, Bruce, they just kept passing it back and forth until they were often behind their own net. They would pass themselves into trouble. And players like Nurse, Benning, Russell, Larson, Klepp, they've all got to move the puck. Sekera is usually pretty good, except he was playing mm-hmm. on one leg. But they've all got to move that puck with so much more efficiency this coming season if the Oilers are going to take a step up.
Yeah, I'd be interested to be a fly on the wall when Viveros, or Yanni for that matter, sits down and chats over strategy with Chris Russell, who has developed something of a deserved reputation, in my view, for the Russell reset, which I don't see as all bad, but it's not the modern game in some respects, which is push the puck up from the defense to the forwards. And I think the player is capable of that, but it's going to take a mighty change of mindset from him. And maybe if you have it coming filtering down through all the coaches, that will have some effect. Adam Larson, on the other hand, who's somewhat the same, that his first outlet choice is his partner, and that's fine if he's got a good mobile partner. But I saw from him in the World Championships, when he was given a little bit more free rein to contribute offensively, that he really did. And I think there's potential in that player that's waiting to be unlocked, and hopefully this will be the recipe.
I think the same with Russell. I don't think we see the Russell reset, Bruce, as often as we did. If the coaches weren't on some level thinking that's good, mm-hmm. if they thought that was bad, 2 years into his time with the Oilers, why are we constantly seeing it? Mm-hmm. If he was being pushed to like move that puck, move, you know, I don't want to see that reset. That's against the rules to play it to do that. Like you will not do that. You're going to move that puck, buddy, and move it fast. That's the game we play. If that was the message, Bruce, I don't think we would have seen the Russell reset. So I like the fact that they brought in Viver Ross and Yanni, of course, who's had such, some real success in terms of developing defensemen over the years in Chicago and Anaheim. And that Anaheim defense last year, I was salivating watching those guys play. The aggressiveness with that they pinched, and the smarts that they used on the offensive blue line, moving the puck around, and in the defensive zone, moving the puck up. That was just, they played fast hockey. And I was thinking, wow, you know, this is what the Oilers are really missing. We are just so slow and dull on the back end, and our puck movement is so lacking. Even a player like Benning, who I think has potential, he just was chopping the puck. It was so frustrating to watch.
Yeah, well, of course, in Chicago, the group of Keith Seabrook, Chalmerson, that all came up on his watch.
Letty.
And yes, good point. And then in Anaheim, in addition to the guys that are still there, we saw Sammy Vatanen, who got moved last year. Shea Theodore went to Las Vegas. And, of course, the guys that are still there, Fowler,
Montour,
Lindholm. And, you know, even Josh Manson, who's not your prototypical offensive defenseman, but he does, he is involved in the general, let's get the puck moving north concept.
So it'll be interesting. Like, so the only one I wonder about is Gullitson. Like, it seems like there's a lot of, like, there are a lot of chefs here. So you wonder about the broth. Like, you know, is there too many people? There's only so much to do in a hockey team, and you want to keep, a successful team's going to keep it simple and just keep, you know, it's not going to be that complicated where everyone's got to memorize a 5,000 page playbook. So, you know, I do have some questions about the depth of the, you know, all these strong personalities and hockey minds getting together. But that said, Gullitson has been an assistant coach recently, as has Viver Ross, and Yanni has as well. So overall, I'm really happy with what's gone on here. The change was needed, and I'm glad it was made.
Well, yes, there's depth. There's depth of quality and experience there that you know, it should really rise the tide, I think, a little bit overall, and desperately needed, as you stated.
So, Bruce, speaking of puck moving defensemen, this week we've been watching the Memorial Cup Finals, and there's been a player, Noah Dobson, playing for Acadie Bathurst Titan, mm-hmm. Who is ranked on most draft lists somewhere between about 8th and 12th, and could fall to the Oilers at 10th. When you look closely at the players, Bruce, the frustrating thing is there's five defensemen who are really kind of consensus top-rated players, including Dobson. And there's four forwards who are kind of consensus top-rated players. And Bruce, that adds up to 9. And the Oilers are drafting 10th. So that bugs me.
I blame
that bugs me.
I blame Chris Russell. You know, game 82, about 15 seconds left in overtime when he made that goal line save off of one of the Sedins. And not only did that spoil the storybook ending for the Sedins, the Oilers won that game in the shootout, and they passed, I think it was New York Rangers. So they shifted down one spot. And, of course, all of those teams shifted down one more spot in the draft lottery. And all of a sudden, there they are in the 10 hole. No, I think there's probably 10. I'm hearing 10 or 11 players. And a couple guys have kind of raised their stock. This Kotkaniemi, the Finnish
center.
I think he was outside the consensus top 9, but now he's kind of part of the consensus top 10. And some team might even pick him ahead of the Oilers. It's certainly not beyond the realm of possibility. I'm reasonably convinced there'll be a quality player available at 10. I'm less convinced it'll be the Oilers making the pick.
Yeah, that's a good point. I want to make it clear, like, I'm saying there's not good players. I have no idea. Like, I've seen Dobson a little bit and a few of the other players a little bit, but I don't really have any idea who they should take and who the best player is. And maybe there's two or three other guys who are completely deserving to be taken in the top 10. Undoubtedly there are. That's how it's going to play out over time. We just don't know who those guys are right now. And Blue Bullet Brad put out, he's a draft, Brad McPherson, he's a draft analyst. He gave a little reminder on Twitter. Essentially, Bruce, the Oilers have about a 1/3 chance with the 10th pick over time, like in, you know, on average, the 10th pick over time on average, about 1/3 of the time turns into a good NHL player. And about 1/3 of the time, he's a total bust. Those are the odds, okay, of getting a good NHL player and or a total bust. And then there's the other 1/3 that are kind of in the middle. So, of course, we're all thinking with that 10th pick, it's going to be that good, really good player, right? And we saw Dobson, man, he looks like a fine prospect, heads up hockey player, moving the puck so well, walking the line, getting shots. And you just think, oh, wow, he's a surefire thing. But the players taken at that level aren't. They're not surefire things.
6'3", right-handed shot. What's not to like, right?
Yeah, he just...
These guys just look like gold when they're
at that level,
playing against their own age group and dominating with their skills. And when they step up to the NHL, the skill dominance is less of a thing. And then the blemishes start to show, you know, and they have to keep improving. So that's key. Sometimes these kids at 18, they don't get a lot better. And sometimes they're just starting the big power curve up and up. So
I have to say, my first impression of Dobson, though, was really like I drop in on, when it's draft time, I kind of drop in on the prospects and start watching them. And he reminds me in recent years of Cam Fowler a lot, from that same age group, when Cam Fowler was that age. And to some extent, Mikhail Sergachev. Sergachev's more of a powerful and more fluid player, but Dobson's a little bit like him as well. And I like him a ton better than I liked Olli Juolevi, who Vancouver took fifth, I think it was fifth or sixth. Yes. I like Dobson way better than I did Juolevi in that draft year. So I'd be thrilled. Maybe wrongly, maybe incorrectly, but I'll be thrilled if Dobson comes to the Oilers.
Yeah, the other young defenseman I've seen a fair bit of in the last little while is Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
Who's a left-shooting, small, American-born defenseman. I watched him play on Cooper Marody's team in the NC2A regionals. And then he made the USA team at the World Championships at age 18.
So what's your first impression?
My first impression, he can skate, he can really see the game, and he does that thing we talked about up front, moving the puck quick from the back end. And he's like uber quick. It's on his stick and it's gone, and it's gone to the right place about 90% of the time. So, but his size, you know, it's one of those things. He could play center. He's one of those kind of guys. He reminds me a little bit of Phil Housley in terms of his game would translate to other positions.
Yeah.
But his natural position appears to be defense. Of course, his younger brother, Jack Hughes, is everyone's consensus to be number one overall next year. So there's apparently it's a talented family.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of Bockfist play for Sweden in that U18 tournament. And he didn't play great, but man, he's got some offensive skill. Wow. And apparently he might've got a concussion, but he can really, he's really got moves with that puck. I mean, there's no denying his offensive talent. So, but Bruce, you brought up a good point, and let's kind of close on this, whether or not the Oilers are even going to have that 10th pick, because Bruce, when I look at the Oilers, you know, Nicholson's talked about, we've got a plan, and you know, when the fans hear about the plan, they're going to love the plan. He said it was almost like Donald Trump. Like, they're, you know, this is the most fantastic plan. Well, I think we've seen the plan play out in terms of what's going to happen with management and coaching. And I think fans are happy, but if there's not a second part, if part of that plan with some smart player moves, fans aren't going to be happy. But I don't really see much possibility for a whole lot. The owners are capped out. They got Nurse to sign and Benning to sign. There's very little cap room, and that really limits what you can do in a trade, because often you have, you're using that cap space to make a trade. And, you know, they're stuck into Sekera and Lucic, who they can't move. I just don't see any way, although many fans fantasize about Lucic and Sekera trades. Mm-hmm. I just don't see it. They just got have such negative value that I don't see that happening. And where does a move get made unless you're going to trade that 10th pick, which might make sense given the average historical performance of 10th overall picks. But then you bring in a good, maybe you bring in an average to good NHL player for that pick, but you lose them then in the expansion draft in a year. What is it, 2 years?
You might. Yeah. Well, you're going to lose one player then. And
yeah,
exactly one. So, I mean, if you lose one guy, that means you get to keep someone else. I mean, think of Jujhar Kara, for example, who didn't get picked last year and he wound up staying with the Oilers. We were obsessing with the fact that the Oilers exposed their defense, they wound up keeping another player who wound up to be pretty useful. So
I was thrilled about that myself. I was hoping that they would take Reinhart and not Kara.
It's a bit of a mug's game to try and calculate expansion 2 years out. But the general point is that anybody you draft in this year's draft will be completely sheltered from that expansion.
Whereas exactly.
Anybody you trade for will have to be taken into consideration. So
yeah, so if you get a good player in the draft, he's free. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have to protect him. But if you trade for a good player, you will.
Probably, yeah. Unless he's brand spanking new. The only guys that won't be eligible in the draft will be the 2 year and under guys. So you trade for any guy with any sort of experience, and you're going to have to protect him somehow or risk losing him after trading your number 10 pick for him. So the other option, of course, is to package the 10 with a pretty good player to get a better player. And some people are throwing out the idea of, for instance, number 10 plus Klefbom. Well, in the fantasy world, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, you know, a higher grade defenseman coming back for a defenseman going out. And that creates both space on the roster and a little bit of cap room for the additional money coming in.
Yeah, and your friend the Wood guy put out trade Dreisaitl and Nurse for Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Yeah, I saw that. I like Ekman-Larsson, and I like him more after watching him play with Adam Larsson in the World Championships. But I also like Leon Draisaitl, and I don't think I like that trade proposal.
No, you'd only trade Draisaitl for a true number one D-man. So I don't think the notion of trading Draisaitl for Oliver Ekman-Larsson is crazy. But I do think the idea of adding in Darnell Nurse is, that's when it gets to be like, what? Like, why would you? Why would you make that kind of overpayment? Like, you're telling me you can't get Oliver Ekman-Larsson for Draisaitl? Like, that's like Darnell Nurse on top of that? Like, whoa. Yeah. So anyway, I thought that's where that suggestion went off the rails. And I think Nurse, I don't want to speak for Darcy, but I know some people that I've seen are worried about how much Nurse is going to get paid. Mm-hmm. And they're worried there's going to be an overpayment. So maybe, you know, maybe people would rather see him moved than the possibility that he's going to get like $5 million a year. Cause that might, people who don't think a lot of Darnell's game might, they're going to hate that if he gets that amount of money.
And yet you have Bob Stauffer saying the Oilers might think about signing Darnell Nurse long-term now before Trent Yanni makes him so much better that he's going to cost a fortune in 2 years.
What would be your gut move? What would you do, Bruce? Let's say you could sign Nurse for an equivalent contract to the Klefbom or Larsson contracts, which now would be like they get 4.167, mm-hmm. but that was signed when the cap was left. So that would probably project to, I don't know, 4.7, 4.8 over a long term. Would you do that with Nurse?
My temptation right now is to bridge him, but that's conservative.
I'd go long term on that kind of deal.
The Oilers got a lot of long terms. A case certainly can be made either way, but I didn't like how his game kind of regressed in the second half of the season. And I'm not sure.
Did it regress, Bruce? Or did he just face
entire competition and had trouble coping with it?
Yeah, that's it. He got promoted to a position he couldn't handle. If they kept using him in the third pairing or the second pairing, I think he would have been fine. He didn't meet the challenge of being in the top pairing, is how I would put it. Right. He's still a really excellent player if you use him right, but maybe that I think he was fine in the second pairing even. Mm-hmm. But when you gave him that top pairing role, that was obviously way too much, and he got eaten alive like every other Oilers defenseman in the top pairing got eaten alive last year, Bruce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had their struggles for sure, and Nurse was the healthiest one of the bunch.
Yeah.
He was really good up until Christmas or so.
Yeah, it's a really tough role. You know, the only Oilers defenseman who only played the toughest minutes all year long was Larson. Every other defenseman, Klefbom, had a lot of time in kind of the third/second pairing after he imploded. Russell, he got moved down to the third pairing in November after he imploded in October. Nurse started out low and then his game deteriorated or he couldn't meet the challenge when he was moved up. Sekera, of course, they started him out back in the top, kind of a top pairing role, and he just could not handle it even close.
Yeah, he was third pairing all the way in terms of ice time, competition, everything else. I mean, he went from an excellent top four to a poor bottom pairing guy.
I think he was the top pairing guy. Personally, I think that was his role when the Oilers were strong in 2016-17, Sekera. He was their best defenseman and he became their worst. And man, if there's two things that I'm hoping for next year, it's Sekera to become close at least to his former self and Cam Talbot bounce back. And if those two things happen, I think a lot's going to go right for this team.
Or Mikko Koskinen to come in and post a 1,000 save percentage in the NHL. That'd be good.
That'd work.
Wishful thinking, eh?
All right. So are you hoping to see a trade or not? What do you, with that, would you, what would be your preference? Use the pick or if they can make a trade, Bruce, for a top pairing defenseman, like a true number one guy moving Klefbom in the 10th, is that what you want to see? Or would you rather them see hold steady?
It depends on who the guy is, what his contract is, how much is left on it. Those kind of things, which presumably that's just due diligence for the team. But you don't want to trade for, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk and his 1 year left who says, I want to play on the East Coast. And he goes to the East Coast and you wind up with nothing, right? You don't want that. You want a guy who's maybe got a couple years left, but who clearly can be convinced to stay in the longer term.
Yeah, a lot of Oiler fans.
I like Klefbom, and you know what? I like Keith Gretzky. I like what he's done on the draft table, so I'm very loath to give up that pick.
Yeah, I'm content if they don't move it, and I'm sure content. Like a lot of Oiler fans were very keen to bring in Shattenkirk, and man, I am glad that that did not happen. Like, hold up your hand if you're glad the Oilers didn't shoot the wad on Kevin Shattenkirk right now, because
both my hands in the air, and I just never liked that player. And all the time they were talking about getting that guy and paying him $7 million and stuff, I'm just going, no, this is not the solution.
A lot of fans just love that idea. They just thought this is the number one guy. Like, this is the guy. Like, this is a great move. And I just didn't see it. He'd never played as a he'd often played as kind of a third pairing defenseman.
Yeah, second pairing at even strength, ideally.
He's Justin Schultz, isn't he? I mean, kind of. He's that player, and I like that player, but not if you're counting on him to be your top pairing guy. And that seemed to be the case.
He's Tyson Barrie I just don't see top pairing. So if you're going to make the trade that we're talking about there, Klefbom plus a pick, you're talking about not just top pairing, but really a number one.
So we're all secretly hoping for the Chris Pronger trade, where the first Chris Pronger trade, the Eric Brewer plus, what else went there, Bruce? Brewer plus...
Jeff Foy-Witka and Doug Lynch.
So there
three
you
have three young, good young defensemen. They were all good prospects, and stuff happened to Roy Whitkin, especially to Lynch.
So
but the Oilers won the trade because Pronger was so good.
So what would be the modern day equivalent of that? It would be so Klefbom is the Brewer spot. Let's say
that's fair.
Let's say Caleb Jones, and we need one more defenseman. How about Mantha? He's kind of the Lynch was always hurt, so Mantha's hurt now. For what? Alex Pietrangelo, like Chris Pronger was the best defenseman of his time. Like what a trade that was.
He was certainly on the short list. He was everybody's idea of a true number one. Let's put it that way. Whether you thought, well, Nick Lidstrom was better, or you know, there's a few guys that were he was in the upper echelon, you know, in consideration for the All-Star team. Top four in the league.
That'd be like bringing in Carlson, I guess. Erik Karlsson for that package of players.
Yeah, something like. And even that's a very different player from Pronger.
Yeah, but stylistically.
You talk about that caliber.
Yeah, just player, the caliber. Yes. It's not going to happen. It's a different NHL right now than it was then. It's a different cap situation, different cap world. And, and that's not going to happen. So, yeah. So it looks like what's going to happen, Bruce, is maybe not a whole heck of a lot, that we're going to see smaller moves, and that'll be it. It's the Bob Stauffer's less is more idea that we're going to see. And the bet will be that the Oilers of 2016-17 were the real Oilers, not the Oilers of last year. Mm-hmm. And it's not a terrible bet. At least I don't think so.
Still got McDavid.
Exactly. Draisaitl.
I think the odds of a McDavid team missing the playoffs were poor this past year, and I think they're poorer again next year. Like, you know, he's just too much of a difference maker and game changer. And obviously it didn't work out last year. A lot of stuff went wrong, including McDavid getting very sick.
That's right.
If you cut you minimize some of the damage to the key players and have them not necessarily missing fewer games, but being healthy when they're in the lineup, which was a big problem last year. Then you've got certainly got the makings of a playoff team, and hopefully some of the improvements in the coaching staff, as we see them today at least, will translate into points in the standings.
Alrighty, let's leave it there, Bruce. It is a nice day. Time to get outside.
It is.
Thanks for
off to the observatory for me for the afternoon shift.
Alrighty. Well, thanks for talking, Bruce.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.